you guys. Tomes of Terror time once again. And again, we have a really, really good one. You guys seriously need to read this one. This one is called Cold Moon Over Babylon by Michael McDowell. Now, this is actually the second Michael McDowell book that I've read and reviewed. If you remember a while back, a few months ago, I think, I did The Elementals. And I, you know, really need my horror cred revoked because I had not heard, and I went a little bit into this on my Elementals video, but I hadn't heard of Michael McDowell prior to seeing a review of The Elementals on a BookTube channel that I watch all the time. And I'm like, wow, that sounds fantastic. So that was kind of like the first one I bought, and I loved it. And subsequently, when I was doing research for that video, I found out that Michael McDowell is actually something of a cult figure, I guess, in the horror fiction community. He wrote a shit ton of paperback horror, like during the paperback horror boom of the 70s and 80s, not only under his own name, but he wrote under several different pseudonyms as well. He also probably most famously wrote the first draft of the screenplay for Beetlejuice and also the one for Nightmare Before Christmas, which is probably where a lot of people know him. They hype that up a lot because that was kind of like a famous thing that he did. But I guess, and you remember a couple weeks back when I reviewed a Grady Hendrix book and I mentioned Paperbacks from Hell, the book that he wrote that was about the paperback horror boom of the 70s and 80s, and he talked a little bit about Michael McDowell in there. And, Stephen King was a big fan. Peter Straub, I believe, called him, like, you know, the best writer of horror paperbacks going. And I will definitely back that up because, as I said, this is only the second book of his that I read, but I loved this one. Now, The Elemental, this came a little bit later, I believe. I think this, actually, Cold Moon Over Babylon, I think was his second novel. And like The Elementals, it's a Southern Gothic. This one's not quite as weird as The Elementals, but it has some of the same, some of the same aspects to it. Because Michael McDowell, who sadly passed away in 1999 at sign of sort of a young age, unfortunately, he was from Alabama. So a lot of his books are set in Alabama. This one is actually set in a town called Babylon, which is actually in the Florida Panhandle, not that far from the Florida-Alabama line. I'm not sure if it's a real town or not. I mean, I've lived in Florida pretty much my whole life, but it's like I've only been to the Panhandle maybe once or twice during that whole entire time. So I'm not real familiar with that area, but it is called like Alabama South because there's not really a lot of difference. Now, as I said, this is a pulpy, I don't know, that sounds dismissive, but I mean pulpy in a good way. It's like a paperback horror novel from, like, you know, the 70s or the 80s. This actually came out in 1980, but recently, like in the past few years, Valancourt Publishing has been putting out new editions of a lot of his stuff because, like I said, he seems to have be having something of a resurgence, which I'm really, really happy about because, like, his stuff is, like, really, really good. And I'm amazed that I hadn't heard of him before now because I just deserve to be slapped for that, but whatever. But I'm getting to it now, so I promise. And I actually I bought another one of his books too called The Amulet, and I'll be reviewing that at some point. He also, a lot of people seem to like, he wrote like a series of novels called Blackwater, the Blackwater series. And I believe they sell that all in one volume now, so I'll probably be getting to that as well. But I think The Amulet will probably be the next Michael McDowell that I do because I actually have bought that. I just haven't read it yet. But so what you have with this one, as I said, like The Elementals, this is a Southern Gothic that's based in a small town and is based around kind of a series of interconnected families. So there's this little town called Babylon, as I said, which is in the Florida Panhandle. And at the beginning of the book, there's actually a little bit of a prologue where Jim and Joanne Larkin, back in 1965, I believe, are out fishing on a river called the Styx River, like Styx as in the one that flows through the underworld. You know, it's that's so, you know, it's a bad omen, probably, naming your river that, but just saying. So they're fishing on the river and they come across a croaker sack. And and it turns out that it's full of rattlesnakes, and the two of them, get bit and they fall in the river and they drown, and their bodies are never recovered. So then you jump forward to the present day, or at least the present day of this book, which is 1980. Now, they had two children who were, you know, very young at the time, Jerry and Margaret. Now, Jerry and Margaret are now, I believe Jerry is, 19 or 20 or 21, somewhere around there. And Margaret is 14. And they are living with their grandmother, Evelyn, on the farm where they all lived. It's actually a blueberry farm. Now, at the beginning of the novel, you're kind of like, one thing I will say about this is that the description of, and I think I mentioned this when I was talking about the elementals too, Michael McDowell is a fucking genius when it comes to just immersing you in the world that he's created. You can see it, you can smell it, you can taste it. It's just, he's really, really good. It's so, so descriptive. And like a lot of the descriptive language is just really, really beautiful. It's like almost poetic. So when you're reading this book, you can really just kind of put yourself in the town. Like, you know, I could see it as plain as day. Just the way he described it. So they have this blueberry farm, which has been sustaining them for a while, but, you know, they've been starting to have some problems. The blueberry plants aren't producing the way they used to. There's been bad rains, and they're kind of behind on a lot of their bills. So they're not really sure how many more seasons they're going to be able to sustain the farm. And Evelyn, the grandmother, is kind of worried about it. And Jerry, who has, come to an age where he's very young, but he's, you know, kind of the man of the house, I guess. And so he's kind of worrying about it as well. Now, at the very beginning of the book, now I will say I'm not going to spoil everything about this, but it's really, really hard to talk about this book without, you know, spoiling some plot points. And I will say that even though nominally this is a murder mystery, it's not really, because even though a bunch of murders take place, you find out who the killer is pretty much from the jump, like in the first third of the book. So it's not really a whodunit type of thing, which is kind of unusual, because I was actually surprised, like when I was like, oh, okay, we're finding out who killed her already. All right. But and from that point forward, it becomes a vengeful ghost story. So don't go into it expecting it to be like a whodunit, like you're going to figure out who the killer is. They're going to tell you who the killer is like almost immediately, because that's not really what this book is doing. This book is more about a supernatural revenge type of story, not really so much a murder mystery. So almost from the beginning of the book, like I said, other than the prologue where it said like they talked about their parents dying in the sticks, like with the rattlesnakes and whatnot, that, you know, when they jump ahead to 1980. So they're kind of like establishing the town a little bit, establishing how long this family's been there, and establishing the problems they're having with the blueberry farm. And then it turns out that Margaret, the 14-year-old, she has been at the school, like helping out a teacher after school or whatever, and she leaves to go back to the farm on her bike. Very, very close to where the farm is, there's a little bridge over the Styx River, which is, you know, within shouting distance of her house. While she's crossing over this bridge, a dude drives by her in a big black hearse, you know, with fishing poles sticking out of the back. And then when she's almost to the edge of the bridge, a person jumps out of the bushes, basically dressed all in black. I think he doesn't have a shirt on, but he has like a really, really hairy chest or whatever. And he has almost kind of like, it sounded like he was describing like a gimp mask. He had like a gimp mask on. And basically he kind of stabs her sort of, and then he ties her to her bike and throws her and the bike into the river, so she drowns. Now, as I said, it's kind of a mystery at first, you know, who killed her, but you find out pretty soon. Now, after Margaret is thrown into the river, they go, Michael McDowell goes into, obviously, her grandmother and her brother, wondering where the hell she is. There's a terrible, terrible storm. The night that she disappears, they're like, well, maybe she stopped somewhere and she's staying at someone's house. You, the reader, know that she's already dead, which actually makes their reactions to her disappearance and them trying to figure out, like, you know, or trying to justify how maybe she could be okay somewhere is like, makes it really heartbreaking. Because another thing that he's really great at is making you care about these characters. He's very good at making the characters very distinct. And even though this is a Southern Gothic, and, you know, a Southern Gothic, a lot of times the characters are kind of a little bit, exaggerated or like a little bit over the top, which they also were in the Elementals, but in a fun way. They're not quite as exaggerated in this, except maybe there's one girl named Belinda who's like a teenager and she's kind of, you know, she's kind of exaggerated a little bit, but this one, not so much. It does have kind of the same, it's funny because I guess because he grew up in Alabama, so he's very good at capturing the cadence of that, of the way that they talk and like that dialogue and stuff like that, you know, that part of the South. So that's like really good too. So the characters in this are not quite as, you know, over the top as they were in the Elementals, but it's a similar kind of thing. So only a day or two after the disappearance, you know, after they've, you know, obviously she hasn't come back and they've kind of resigned themselves to, you know, the fact that something bad happened to her. So they contact the sheriff. The sheriff is initially, he's not a bad guy. His name's Ted Hale, the character, but he just doesn't really, I mean, this is a tiny, sleepy little town. Nothing bad ever happens here, really, except, you know, he has to pull apart some people, like, they get in fights and drunk and stuff, but it's like, there's not murders. And he's like, well, no one would want to kill her. So he doesn't really take it all that seriously. So she probably just ran off with a boy somewhere, even though she's only 14 years old, but that's kind of what they were thinking. So he doesn't really take it all that seriously. Now, not too long after the sheriff gets involved, like I said, he's not really super investigating because he just thinks she ran off somewhere. But then there's a guy who's fishing under the bridge in the Styx River, and his fish hook catches on the inside of Margaret's mouth, and he pulls her out so they find the body. Now, not too long after they find the body, Evelyn, the grandmother, has a dream that Margaret is getting married and that she can't see the groom at first. But then she sees Margaret get into the car, like the limousine or whatever, and she's driving, she's banging on the back window. And then at the end of the dream, she sees the groom, and she's kind of superstitious. So she believes that this dream is telling her who the person was that really killed her granddaughter. Now, initially, no one's really sure, like, who to suspect at first. Really, the only person they kind of think is maybe a possibility is Warren Perry, who was the teacher at the school that she was helping, because they're like, well, he was the last person to see her. You know, what was she doing helping him? Some people said she had a crush on him, all this other kind of stuff. But they didn't really, they didn't have any evidence, obviously, and, you know, they didn't really have anything to go on, but that was kind of all they knew, because they had never seen a murder like this. Like, who would, you know, who would take a little girl and tie her to a bike and throw her into a, you know, into a thing so she would drown, into the river so she would drown. So they had, you know, they had never like had any experience with this type of thing before. But Evelyn comes to them and she said, because of her dream and because of some other things too, which I'll get into in a minute, she is convinced that the person who killed her granddaughter was this dude named Nathan Redfield. Now, Nathan Redfield is the president of the Bank of Babylon. His dad actually owns the bank, and Nathan is his son. He also has another son named Ben, who's younger. And the two of those brothers are kind of like, you know, they're like the rich boys in town. They live in the biggest, nicest house. And, you know, they kind of get away with everything. Nathan really, really wanted to be bank president, but then he's kind of like, kind of a lazy ass too. And he's also kind of a dick. And it turns out that once he took over the bank from his dad, because his dad was in like an accident or something like that, and he can't really get around all that well anymore because he's in a wheelchair now. So he's been getting all over Evelyn, the grandmother, for her like not being caught up with her loan payments. And then it comes to light later that there might be some reason that he maybe wants their property. So obviously Evelyn has this dream and she's like, you know, he's been, you know, shitting on me about like, you know, getting on me about like paying this loan, even though I'm not that far behind. And, you know, he's being kind of shitty to me. So I think that he killed my granddaughter. Obviously nobody believes her because they're like, look, there's no evidence of that. We can't go accusing like one of the richest people in town of killing somebody when we don't have any evidence. He didn't have any motive. He didn't have any reason, anything like that. So it kind of goes on like that. And then there comes a point, and like I said, from here on, I don't really want to spoil it because I think it's better if you're not really, because this goes in some ways that I really did not expect, in the sense that people, okay, this is all I'm going to say, that people that you don't really expect are going to die, die. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, because a couple times when I was reading this, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, really? And it was like, and I wasn't even that far into the book. And I'm just like, holy crap, I can't believe he just fucking did that. Like, he really like pulls the rug out of you, like on a few occasions. And it was kind of awesome. It's like sad and it's like heartbreaking because a lot of these characters, you know, it's a whole town worth of characters and they're kind of all interrelated and stuff. And you really kind of get to know all of them. So when something bad happens to one of them, you really kind of just like, oh man, that dude or whatever. So it's that kind of shit. So after that happens, there's been like little hints of supernatural shit. Because like I said, you know, like Margaret dies like pretty much in the first, you know, 10 pages of the book. You know, so you know she's dead. And it gets to a point like just very slowly over the first half of the book, there's kind of like little hints that she is kind of gathering up like to come back, like to take revenge, right? Like the way that he describes, you know, her spirit or whatever, like coming out of the water. Cause it's almost like she's sort of like this vengeful, I guess you see it in a lot of horror movies nowadays, but I guess back in 1980, it was kind of like a really interesting ghost kind of thing he had going where she kind of like, she's kind of like made of river silt sort of, but then she's kind of looks like a ghost as well, but then she's also kind of solid. And like, I loved his description of her like coming out of the river and like forming and stuff. And that was like really, really cool. And there's a whole thing too with like the moon and how sometimes like when the vengeful spirits are like after the murderer, they'll go into like a weird nightmarish dimension, like where the moon is like really, really big and it's like shining down exactly on, you know, what it wants you to see and stuff like that. It's almost kind of like it's causing hallucinations. So it's that kind of stuff. So that's what I mean, like all the imagery in this, like the way he describes it is like really, really creepy and like really nightmarish. And it's really awesome. So from that point, from the shocking moment forward that I was not expecting to happen, like especially that early in the book, I was like, holy shit, okay. Because I thought it was just going to be, you know, Margaret dies and she comes back and like takes revenge on the person that's, you know, because there's a bunch of shit going on in the town, like the person they think is the killer is not the killer. And, you know, so she's going to go after the real guy. But then like when there's this big shocking thing that happens, then there's even more ghosts and, you know, they start going after the dude too. And then so from that point forward, it's more, it's like a ghostly revenge type of story. It's not, so like I said, don't go into it expecting a murder mystery because it's not. You find out pretty much immediately who the murderer is. And then the rest of it is just the ghosts exacting revenge in particular ways and plots and schemes of the murderer to try to get away with various things and all this other stuff. So that's kind of what's going on as well. Now, interestingly, like I said, now this, if you liked the Elementals, this is not quite as weird as that. Cause that, like I said, that one was a little more over the top, a little weirder, like as far as the imagery went. This one is more like a standard Southern Gothic ghost story. The way he describes the ghosts is, you know, unique. They look kind of unique, like with all this black water and silt like coming out of this. Like I said, it's not original now because a lot of horror movies have done that. But in 1980, I think it was a little bit less, you didn't see it as much, you know, with like the black eyes and the mouth and stuff like that. So he was kind of like ahead of his time, I guess. You know, so there's that. So yeah, but I mean, I really loved this. I got super into it. Like I said, I could just see the whole thing happening in front of my eyes and I just thought it was amazing. Now, interestingly, while I was reading this, I thought to myself, wow, it's like, this would probably make a kick-ass movie because the way he describes the town and the way he describes the visions and the ghosts and stuff, I was like, man, that sounds like it would be really cool. I said, but they'd probably fuck it up. And then about an hour or two after I finished reading the book, I discovered that they had made a movie adaptation of this back in 2016. It's just called Cold Moon. And it wasn't, I don't think it had like a massive, you know, theatrical release or anything like that. Maybe it did. I feel like the guy that directed it was, I think he had done like some sci-fi originals like Ghost Shark and stuff. But it's not as bad as that. So, I mean, if I haven't seen any of his other movies, but going by the titles, I was like, this was probably his best one. But, and it had actually like a lot of really famous people in it. Christopher Lloyd was in there. Not, he had like kind of a small part. He played like the dad the guy that owned the bank, you know, the dad of Nathan Redfield, the bank manager or the bank president. So Christopher Lloyd was in it. Frank Whaley was in it. He played the sheriff. Candy Clark was in it. She played Evelyn, the grandmother. I'm trying to remember who else. Weirdly, there was a cameo appearance by Tommy Wiseau. I'm not really sure why that was in there, but it's like there's a very brief scene at the beginning where they're doing like a rattlesnake rodeo. Like they're, you know, people are rounding up rattlesnakes and they're like, oh, you get prizes for like the biggest one and shit. The South. For whatever reason, Tommy Wiseau is in there as kind of like the carnival barker guy, like on this. I don't even remember if he has any lines. I think he says something like, you're tearing me apart, Mark, or Lisa, or whatever he says. He says some like variation of the famous line. So I was just kind of like, okay, that was random. You know what I mean? So yeah. So, but he's in there, and Josh Stewart is in it. He plays Nathan Redfield. And so I decided, like about an hour or two after I finished reading, I said, what the hell? I'm going to watch the movie, because I found it's free on Tubi if you want to watch it. I didn't love it. I don't know if I just wasn't in the right mood for it, or if it was because I just finished reading the book, which was so vivid and so detailed. And then I see the movie and I'm like, this really wasn't the way I was picturing it. Like, this wasn't what the people looked like, that, you know, this wasn't what I was picturing them looking like. This wasn't what the town picture that I looked like. This wasn't the ghosts I was picturing. So maybe it was that. And also, this is a problem that I have a lot. Like, when I go to see a movie that's based on a book that I just read, it seems like everything in the movie is happening like way too fast. Because, you know what I mean? Like, I'm watching a movie, I'm like, what the fuck? This is happening already? It's like, this was like 2/3 of the way through the book before this happened. And it's only like 20 minutes in the movie and this is already happening. So, I mean, obviously they had to leave a lot of shit out. It's actually a fairly faithful adaptation. They even use like big chunks of dialogue and stuff. The only like big change was that Margaret, the girl that gets murdered at the beginning, in the book she was 14, and in the movie they made her 16, I guess, so it wouldn't be quite so creepy, some of the shit that came to light later on in the book. But yeah, that was like the only major change that they made. Everything else was pretty much the same. And like I said, they even used a lot of the way he described things, the way it wasn't, like I said, I think the problem I had with the movie too, other than, and that might've been just me because I just read it and I was just kind of like, you know, this is all happening. This is like, they're cramming all of this stuff in here and it's just like happening too quickly. I didn't really like the CGI was kind of fine. It was, you know, passable. And I don't know. I think that it went too far over the top. You know what I'm saying? Because I just felt like, yes, it's a Southern Gothic, and yes, I understand that when you do a Southern Gothic, that's kind of a thing, that everything's, like I said, sort of exaggerated. But I don't know. I felt like some of the characters were too exaggerated. I felt like Candy Clark as Evelyn, I think she went a little over the top. Christopher Lloyd, I think he went kind of way over the top. The girl that played Belinda, I've seen her before. I mean, she's been in some other stuff. She went a little bit over the top. She was kind of over the top in the book, but not as much. And it also kind of annoyed me too, because in the book, Belinda, who was the sheriff's daughter, and she actually, she was like 17, I think, and she looked after the bank owner guy, the, you know, the one that was in the wheelchair. So she came and looked after him, like, because she wanted to be a nurse or whatever. And one of the things that she kept bringing up was that he called her, his nickname for her was Miss Pie, because they were talking about, like, how fat she was. And I think even in the book, I don't think she was actually fat, because she was, you know, she was like the teenage, like the, what do you call it? The cheerleader, leader, whatever. I don't know what they call that. I wasn't a cheerleader. But so she couldn't have been that much of a heifer. It's just that I think it was they were kind of like joking about, oh, she, you know, she was a little bit chubby, or she was a little bit voluptuous or something. And everybody was kind of making fun of her like she was fat. So she kept referring to herself as fat. And then in the movie, the girl that they had playing her was really not fat. So the fact that she was like talking about how fat she was, and it's like she brings some clothes to get let out. Oh, I wore these 15 pounds ago. I'm like, bitch, what do you weigh now? Like 95 pounds. Shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? So it was very weird. So it was that kind of thing. The movie, it's not bad. And I think if you come to it, I'd be curious, like, knowing if people just watch the movies. Like I said, if you watch the movie, it's on Tubi. It's just called Cold Moon. It's not called Cold Moon Over Babylon. I'd be interested to know what somebody that hadn't read the book thought about it. Because I think part of the reason that I didn't like it was that I had just read the book, so I was really aware of everything that was left out. I was really aware of how it didn't match up with my picturing of it. I mean, it wasn't really scary or anything. And honestly, the book, I thought the book was like really, really creepy. Like some of the imagery was like really creepy, and just the way he described it. And it was the same thing with the elementals, like the, you know, the whole image of like the house, like being buried in the sand and like all the things coming out of the sand and stuff. It's like, it was a similar kind of thing here, like where he was describing the ghost coming out of the river. And there's one great scene toward the end where like the killer is, you know, kind of brought toward the cemetery, you know, where the, like the family plot is, and there's a massive moon like shining over it. And, you know, it's just the way he describes that scene is just so, so great. And just like shit, like, you know, the killer's driving once and he like loses time, like he's suddenly on a road that he doesn't recognize. And, you know, it just goes on and like the street lights are going out. And it was just like really, really cool. I don't know. It was just like a really cool like description of it. So I think that maybe the movie was just bound to be a letdown, because I think I even thought that before I even knew there was a movie adaptation of it. When I was reading the book, I'm like, man, this would probably make a kick-ass movie. And then I found out, oh, there was a movie. And then I was like, oh, what the hell? So I sat down and watched it, and I was like, nah, now I kind of wish I hadn't, but oh well. It's not that bad. And actually there was, you know, there's a lot of kind of big names in it. It's just that I think that a good movie could be made of it, but I'm not really sure that that was it. It was a passable movie, but I didn't really dig it. I just, some of the performances were just a little too exaggerated for me. And then some of them were kind of real. I mean, Josh Stewart was great in it. He played Nathan Redfield, but some of the performances I thought were just a little too much. I thought it went a little too far into camp, and probably, I think they should have kept it more serious. I don't know. Because even though, you know, there are still like exaggerated like Southern people in the book too, but the book is pretty serious and pretty brutal, and like some really terrible shit like happens in this book. So, you know, just know that going in. And like I said, nobody in this book, main character, whatever, nobody is safe. Anybody could die. So just know that going in too, because you'll get attached to the characters, and then you'd be like, well, what the fuck? It's like, you know what I mean? Because so many fucking people die in this movie, or in this book, and they die in like really, really horrible ways. So, you know, knowing that too. So it's kind of like, it's gory, it's creepy. It's just, I don't know. I loved it. And I just, the whole atmosphere of it was fantastic. And I just thought it was fucking great. Movie was meh, but you know, what are you going to do? But you still have the book. Read the book instead. Or you can watch the movie if you want. I don't give a shit. But you know what I mean? And like I said, this definitely is not going to be the last Malcolm McDowell. That's a totally different guy. Michael McDowell will be reading. I definitely will be doing The Amulet at some point, because I have that one as well. But yeah, check out Cold Moon Over Babylon. And also The Elementals, which I reviewed before too, if you want to watch that. I did that a few months ago. But yeah, definitely check his stuff out. I'm really, really glad. I mean, it's sad that he passed away a long time ago, but I'm glad that his stuff is being rediscovered, because it's really outstanding, and I really dig it. So yeah, that'll do it for this Tomes of Terror, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye!